Judy and I have had a tough couple of months. A couple of months ago, she lost her sister, and last week I lost mine. And so, in fact, right about now we were in her room, and I'll talk about that more in just a second. But we were Friday preparing to come home after my sister's funeral, and I was preparing and looking at my notes that I had planned on sharing today from Luke. And Judy saw me doing that, and she said, "I know you probably won't do this, but I think it would be very powerful if you shared some of the things with on Sunday that you shared at the funeral." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Yes." And we discussed it a little bit, and there was a couple of points that really ministered to her. And so the more I pondered that and thought about that, I said, "You know what? I'm not over this thing by any means. I'm still extremely emotional. I'm not done with my sister, and I hope you'll tolerate me to share with you some of the things about it." I've tweaked it so it becomes more of a sermon than a funeral, and I want to share it with you. So join in with me just a little bit. Imagine, if you can, one of your children walking into an ICU room in a hospital, and in that room is another one of your children on the bed, and your child that walks in the room has been told that your other child will only have a short while to live, a few hours. How did you prepare that child for that? How do you prepare that child for that? Can you prepare that child for that? I wasn't prepared. I thought I was. You know, in the natural, the way things naturally roll around, you kind of understand that your parents will go on. But a sibling, you're just not ready for that. I haven't prepared my children. And I have two. And very, very likely, one day, one of them will walk in that room. Last Sunday, I walked in that room. It was church day. It was the day that my sister would leave her body in that room and meet God, literally. It was church for me last week. That's she's the person I grew up with. She's the person that I spent every day with when I was young. She's the person who called mom and dad the same people I called mom and dad. She's the person that I would walk out of the house, wait for the bus with, get on the bus, go to school, come back from school, get off the bus, walk back into the same house with. She's my sister. 2 years and 5 months her elder. But now she's in the ICU room, 61 years old, with only a few hours to live. Carol battled cancer since around 92, 93. She began to find things in her body. Around 94, 95, it really kind of came forth in a horrific way. And she battled it, and she battled it through all the chemo and the radiation and the taking antibiotics and all of the poking and the needles and all the vents. Is that what you know? They are all the things that ports, all the ports and all that she had. And here she is now. She thought at one time she had it beat, but it didn't. It came back, and it came back viciously. It had evolved to a place in her life where every day she had to go to the doctor, every day of her life. She'd go to the doctor, and there again, they would violate her body, sticking it, poking it, taking blood or giving it blood, giving it chemo, antibiotics, every day, hours every day. She would call me, or I'd call her, and we would talk, and she would tell me what she was going through, and never in a negative complaining way, But she would just share with me what she was doing and how she was going to the doctor and all of these things. And I would say something, man, it's just not good. That's just not right. And Carol would say, yeah, but I'm still here. And this is what I have to do, and I'll do it. It was amazing. She never, ever complained. And one of the best gifts she ever gave me is she called me brother. And she, before we'd hang up, she'd always say, brother, I want you to pray for me. I mean, for your sister to want you to pray for them, that was big to me. And I would. She liked how I prayed. Guys, didn't pray a mamby-pamby prayer. I cursed that cancer in her body. I spoke life to her. And she'd always tell me, I felt better after you prayed for me. So, Carol, as a child, was nearly a perfect child. She's the child you'd like to have for a child. I guess God's good like that. He gives every family one of those. And then he also gives you those like me that's not like that. And that's all. I never remember Carol being disciplined, much less spanked. Not by mom, not by dad, never. Now, it wasn't that way with me. And I was always getting disciplined and always in trouble. And the closest Carol ever came to getting in trouble was because of me. She was an excellent person. Not only was she an excellent child, but she was excellent in life. She approached life with this way. She was an excellent sister. She was an excellent friend. She was an excellent employee. She was an excellent wife, an excellent mother, an excellent grandmother. She was an excellent relative. If I wanted to know something about our family, Carol's the person to call. I would call her to get a phone number or an address, or in the course of conversation, I would say, how's so-and-so, how's uncle doing, how they doing? And she would always know because she had just recently talked to him and spoke to him, and she always knew. She was an excellent relative, and she became an excellent church member. She served her church. I didn't realize how much she served until I got to be with her pastor during these days that I'm talking to you about. And he relayed to me how much Carol served when she didn't feel like serving. When it was obvious she didn't have the strength to even be there. There she was. She loved God. She loved people. And she did life with an excellence. So the question I projected Thursday to the people that came to the funeral was this. If Carol was such an excellent person, and she was good like that and loved God, then why did she have to battle cancer for 2 decades? Why did she have to go through all the probing and the poking and the radiation and the chemo? Why? Why did she have to suffer this and be through all the worry and the concern and all the things that she had to go through? Why was she taken? Why was she taken when there are millions of people who should be taken? Why her? Why anyone like her? Why is someone taken from everything they love and from everything that loves them? Why? Why? Of course, I can't answer that sufficiently. But it's been a question that's always been asked. So I pondered that. It's been a question forever. You see, it's like you serve God, and then he just kind of throws you away and forgets about you when you're really in a time of need. And David fought with this. David dealt with this. All through the Psalms, David talks about this specific thought several, many times. And David felt at points in his life, many points, that God just used him while he was young and strong and viral and able to do stuff for the kingdom and expand the kingdom. But then when David got sick and old, God just watered him up and threw him away like an old rag. He writes about that in Psalm 71. Let's read this verse together. Psalm 71 and verse 9. It says, do not cast me away when I'm what? When I'm old. What's he saying? You used me when I was young and vital and strong. Now you're going to throw me away? He goes on. This is the man after God's own heart. He goes on, he says, do not forsake me when my strength is gone. Isn't that how we feel? Not about ourselves, probably about other people that we loved, we cared about. Why did God take them? Why? What's going on here? We doubt God? Are you even God? Where are you? You used them, you used us while we were young and strong and could help you and do stuff. But now it's like when we're really needing you. Where are you? Throwing us away. I was pondering this and I was even thinking about Jesus. You know, Jesus says, can't we figure some way else to do this? And then hanging on the cross, Matthew chapter 27 and verse 46 says this. In about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice. So everybody there heard him. Question God, where are you? My God, why have you forsaken me? Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is to say, my God, where are you? You forsaken me? You used me? And now you left me? Even Jesus didn't understand. And this is where we come. And this is where we are sometimes. And of course, those days, this last week, I pondered this a lot. Carol's a good person. Why? Why did she have to go through all those things? See, Carol didn't want to die. I know that may sound trite. Who wants to die? But it was different with her. Because there were several times during her 2 decades of struggling with cancer that she came to the very brink of death. But she would always fight, always win. And she won every time except the last time. She would fight. And she would fight. And what I want to do is share with you her last hours. Maybe beginning when she went to the hospital this last time. And let it work through with some of our thoughts here. Carol had gone to the doctor as she did every day. It was a Thursday, if I'm correct on that. And there they gave her her treatments. And it was a new kind of a chemo or something. And she was doing fine. She comes home, but she starts feeling kind of bad. But there's this ladies thing that the church is doing. And so she tells Ernest, her husband, I'm going to go. I don't really feel like going, but I'm going to go. And that's just what she did. So she goes to church and she comes back and she's not feeling better. She's feeling worse. So she says, I don't feel well at all. I'm going to go to bed. So she went to bed and she couldn't get settled. So around 2 a.m. that morning, she wakes Ernest up and says, you got to take me to the doctor. You got to take me to the emergency room. So they loaded up and they went at 2 a.m. And when they got there, they did some blood tests on her and they went crazy. The place went to alert because her palates were so messed up and she was dying right there. But my sister didn't want to give up yet. She had fight left in her. And she did it. She fought back and stabilized. They took her to the ICU room. And there they began to work with her and she began to get better. Finally, a couple of days in the ICU, they put her into a step-down room from ICU. And she's recovering. She's eating. She's feeling better. There's even discussions and talks about her going home the next day. But that evening, this would have been Thursday night, not last Thursday, but Thursday a week ago, she coded in that room. She died. But my sister was not ready to go yet. And she fought. She came back. They took her and they put her into this ICU room Sunday. And then she goes into that, they put her in there on Thursday. I'm talking about the Sunday where she met God. They put her into this room. And this time they had to give her a ventilator and a breathing tube. Put her on all the medications and drugs for pain and all of those things. Sedator. And this is where when we went down last Thursday. Well, I spent those days with her, with her husband, and in the room, and it was Sunday morning. I had put my cell phone right next to the bed, so in case we got a call, that I would not sleep through it. It rang, and I don't know if you've ever experienced that. You say, "Oh no, oh no," and you're hustling, and you grab the phone, and they tell you. They've called the family. So you go into stress mode. And you're throwing things on and trying to hurry to get to the hospital. And you get there and you finally find a door that you can get in. And you go into the hospital and get to the room. And the family comes and we're all standing around my sister's bed. My brother-in-law, he just wouldn't stand with us. He was always not a foot away from the bed. And he's usually facing her on the bed. He would be usually to the left of her. Everybody else would be over here on the other side. And he would be down leaning over her, holding her with his head beside her head, whispering, talking to her and comforting her, telling her how much he loved her. And we were thinking that just any minute Carol was going to go. Well, we're there, we're crying, we're weeping, you know, but... the monitors start changing, and Carol does. She's not ready yet. She wants to fight some more, and the monitors pick up, and her vitals start kicking back up like they. I mean, and she's not going anywhere yet. They tell us, "Listen, you know, she's really critical. I wouldn't leave." So we kind of everybody leaves the ICU room except for Ernest, and we go back into the ICU waiting room. And this is, you know, early in the morning. This is probably 5 o'clock now or something like that. And we're in the waiting room. And we stay there. And about 11 o'clock, they call us again. When we, you know, take off again, run back there again, 11 o'clock, by the time you guys are starting church here, she's really starting church there. We run into the room there, and again, we're all crying and broken, and Ernest is hugging her, and he wouldn't leave the room anyway, but he was hugging her and talking to her again, because again, we're told she's going to leave. She's going to die. But not my sister. She's not ready yet. There's still fight. There's still a spark of fight in there. And she comes back again. Well, again, you know, listen, she's very critical. You need to stay around. So we go back to the ICU room, everyone but Ernest. He stays in there, and they couldn't even drive him out. He was in there with her. And so we wait again, you know, and we're back in the room, in and out of the room the whole day. And so around 4 o'clock, another time happens. We go into the room at 4 o'clock, and this time it's different. This time the monitors shows the depreciation. And what they told us was going to happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, was beginning to really happen. It became obvious. We're in the room with her, and we're Ernest is in his place, and everybody else is around, and the nurse continues coming in and checking her pulse, and he'd go back out, and he'd medicate her or do whatever he needed to do to her while this was going on. And finally he comes in, and he checks her pulse, and he looks at us, and he said, "I'm going to need to find a physician. I cannot find a pulse." Well, we just, oh, there it was. Well, we're all a mess. We're emotionally wrecked. We've been there all day and all morning, and we're you know, we've been through this, and now here it is. And we're just tore up to pieces. Well, Chad, her son, looks at me and says, "Will you say something?" What he meant is, "Will you pray?" We joined hands right at around her bed, and we all prayed. And I prayed the best prayer I could pray for my sister, you know. Thank you for her, Lord. And then everybody started joining in, and we thank her for this, and thank God for this for her, and that for her. And we all had a really good time of prayer there, thanking him, thanking God for my sister. Well, the physician comes in after we've prayed. He takes a stethoscope, and starts putting it all over her to find a pulse. And,
And he keeps doing it. And he just doesn't look once or twice. And I'm thinking, something's not right. What's going on? And so, you know, either she is or she isn't. I mean, right? That's what we think. He looks at the nurse and he says, go get the vascular Doppler. I don't know what a vascular Doppler was. It's this little device, and they put it right here, and they kind of pop it, and it finds if there's any kind of sign of life, any kind of sparks that are coming, firing, any kind of vascular activity. And he does it, and he says, there's not enough pulse to beat the heart. But she's still firing. She's still trying. And so my sister just refuses to go. She absolutely just will not stop fighting. It was an hour and a half or 2 hours before they finally were able to pronounce her gone and dead. The reason I'm sharing all of this with you is, how is it then that somebody who is an excellent person, a good person, loves God, serves God? I mean, when they just have to drive themselves to do it. Somebody who loves life and will fight for life that much. Why is it? Carol would talk to Ernest about that. And, you know, he would say, you know, you don't need to go. Shouldn't go. And she would say to him, Ernest, I have to live with cancer, but it's not going to become my life. My sister refused to allow anything to take one moment of life from her. She realized more than anybody I've ever known how precious the gift of life is. And she had come to the place where she thanked God for it every day. And she was going to milk life and get every bit of life that she could out of what God had given her. And she was determined to fight until the end. I learned the preciousness of life from her. Why? To show me, if nobody else, how precious life is. How it's worth fighting for until there is not a spark left in me to fight with. To fight for life, no matter how many times they've got to poke me or stick me or draw blood from me or give blood to me. I'm going to fight for life. It is a precious gift of God. That's one reason. I believe that people that are so good, such good people. See, David said this as he pondered this thought, and in Psalm 71, as he comes to a kind of a conclusion there. As to why God, it seems that sometimes He just forsakes us, He uses us, and then throws us away. David kind of come to a conclusion here in Psalm 71. And in verse 18, he says this, even when I am old, even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me. O God, till. What David is saying is, don't let me die till I declare your power to the next generation. To those I can show how to live. Till I can declare to the next generation your might to all who are to come. Why do good people go? Why are they taken when there's so many others who should be taken? It's so that the good people can show us how to live. They show every one of us the importance, the preciousness of life, the gift that God has given to us. They show us not only how to live, but they show us how to die. They're able to proclaim all their days the goodness of God. Carol never complained. Carol never questioned God to me. All she ever said was, pray for me, brother. I I learned a lot from my sister. I probably learned more about the preciousness of life and how to fight for life more from her than anybody else that I've ever known in my whole life. My little sister taught me how to live. But I also learned something from her husband, Ernest. They were married 42 years. And the day that Ernest became her husband, he also became, that very moment, the same day, my brother-in-law. For better or for worse, right? That's what. And I'm talking about me, not him. He got the worst end of that deal. But for better or for worse. And you know, and I told Ernest on different occasions through the years how much I appreciated him and how he loved my parents while they were alive. He loved my sister, and he took care of her. And I would tell him how much I appreciated him. He was there the whole time, just he and I, sometimes in the room all day by ourselves, or whenever I was there, we would be there, just he and I, and we would talk and share. It was obvious that he loved his wife, and now I've seen a lot of men and women do that. You know, they're there the whole time. But I thought I had seen a man love a woman to the max when I watched my daddy love my mama. I hadn't. But I think I have now. While they were attempting to pronounce my sister, Ernest was right there with her. And he was holding her. As the whole time, speaking to her and comforting her, telling her how much he loved her. I mean, in those last moments, he was still loving on her. Telling her what a good woman she was and a good wife she'd been and a mother. Just loving her. I don't know how many of you have seen death. Probably most of us. But when life leaves a body, the body convulses. And it shakes violently. And it's not pretty to watch. And my sister did this. We're all in the room. Life's leaving my sister's body. And she's convulsing. And my sister, in her fight to live, didn't just do it this once. Not my sister. She did it three or four times. A violent convulsing. Ernest never more than a foot from her bed. When she would convulse, Ernest would go and lean over her and cover her while she was convulsing and grab her and hold her tight and whisper again in her ear. And he did that. Every time. I have never, ever seen anything as beautiful as that. He showed me. He taught me. And I started to, I called this, you know, fight for life and love your spouse. I was going to call it a fight for life and love your wife, just because it would rhyme and be a cute little title. But women need to love their husbands like this as well. You see, the vows we take when we marry, he really meant. When Ernest said, "I, Ernest Smith, take thee, Carol Ann Young, to be my lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold, in sickness and in health, for better, for worse, until God, by death, separates us." He meant it. It wasn't just words to Ernest. He lived it. I come back, you know, after Carol had died last Sunday. I came home Monday and I sent the email out. Most of you got it, and I shared that thought with you. I had never seen a man love a woman like he did. And I shared with you that if I get to go in the room with her, with my wife, I want to do what he did. I want to love like that. And women, You need to do it too, because you don't know what day you walk in the room. You don't know how or when first people you love is going to have church that day and meet God. You never know. Love. Love excellently. I wanted to share these 2 points with you today. Number one, life is precious. It is the most precious thing that we can ever experience. Hold on to it. Fight for it. Live it excellently. My sister loved life, so she treated life with excellence. She treated people well. She did things well. Fight for it, no matter how much they've got to stick you, no matter what you've got to do, what hoops you've got to go through. Fight to live. And then the second thing is love your spouse. Love your spouse. Show the love, as David said, to the next generation. Show the love to all those who see. Because I'm telling you, it changes lives. They revolutionized my life. I'm the teacher. I'm the preacher. But they preached something to me that changed me forever. Thank you for tolerating me. Thank you for allowing me to share my sister with you. I promise, I will get over it. Well, I don't know if I ever get over it, but I will do better. I won't be up here crying every week. I promise. Thank you all for your love, your cares, your prayers, your emails, your text, all you do. I love you people. But as horrible as it was, church for me last week was one of the best church services I've ever been in. I got to be when my sister met God. Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for my sister. But thank you for these people. Thank you for their love, their care, their concerns. Well, I don't know if any of them has not asked me how I'm doing. And I just ask you to bless them. Ask you to be with us all. Father, I pray that we have maybe heard a little bit about how wonderful and precious life is. And I pray maybe we've learned a little bit about how to love our spouse. And that one day, there's a room for each one of us. A room where we will meet you. We will have church. I ask you to be with us and bless us in Jesus' name.